living in the higher truth. You know, when I was here in February, right after that, I went to Laos. And in Laos, got really sick. God was with us. I had one of my associates with me, and we endured the week together. But God let us do everything that had been planned. He gave me the energy and the physical ability to get through that. And then we went to China from there. Our wives met us and some more of our team. We spent two more weeks in China, and I got more sick and more miserable, but we got through that, came home, and ever since then, been in and out of the hospital, and it's a long story, but I'll tell you a little bit more of that in just a moment, but let me ask you a question. How many of you have ever had no control in your life? Like life is out of control. Raise your hands. All right, there's quite a few. Or went through some kind of illness. How many of you have gone through a severe illness or suffering, okay? Or a loss, you know, you lost a family member or someone, especially maybe someone who you're not supposed to lose, you know, like a child. In those times, and then transition. Anyone gone through a transition? Everybody's got to raise their hand there, you know, unless you're under the age of, well, one day maybe. And it's in these times that life is really a challenge. You know, when life's going good, unfortunately, we need God, but we sometimes forget we need God. I mean, when everything's just going smooth and perfect, it's amazing how we don't need God, you know, because we pretty much do it on our own, or at least think we can. But it's in those times of transition and change and maybe suffering, loss, or that time that we're out of control, that we tend to have a battle. And typically, the first thing that happens in that battle is we experience fear. Anything experience real fear? Oh, only a couple of you. Okay, that's good. Now I'm afraid. No. fear, and yet God has called us to live in joy. Remember, one of the fruit of the Spirit is what? Joy. And Galatians, Joe read it in first service, Galatians 3, you know, where God, that's the first New Testament book, first epistle anyway, written. And it talks about God, Jesus came to set us free. He set us free from the law, from the old covenant, and he set us free from sin. So that the Spirit might come in us, so that we might live in the fruit of the Spirit. And one of those is joy. And the opposite of joy is what? Fear. Fear. And that's what the enemy, he wants us to experience, is fear. He wants us to live out of fear. He wants every day for us to just be under that cloak, that blanket of fear. And it operates and can rule our life. It can keep us from having life and living life. And God didn't create us to live under fear. He didn't give us a spirit of fear, right? But of joy and a sound mind. He wants us to have dominion over the earth. He wants us to be stewards of his earth, of his plan. And as believers, that's our calling. That's our mission. To bring life not only to ourselves, but to others. And it's hard to do that when you live under fear. It's hard to do that. I mean, you can't even talk about Jesus if you live under fear. You know, just everything gets messed up. Well, I want to take you to a story in John. So if you have your Bibles, turn to John chapter 3. For some of you, obviously, a very familiar story of John the Baptist. But I believe today that God wants us to learn to live in the higher truth, live out of the higher truth of joy. And he's been teaching me that more than ever the last few months. On June 21st, I'd had a surgery a few weeks before that. I went to the doctor. They said, "Oh, you're doing great. It's you're ahead of schedule. You're going to come back in 4 months, and you're going to be like new." Something like that, right, dear? And as we're closing up our appointment, I said, "Well, how about the pathology report? I never heard what the pathology report said." And she said, "Oh, let me go get that." Well, then she comes in and says, "Oh, you have a high-grade, most aggressive prostate cancer that you can have. So you need to come back in 10 days. And that was the end of our appointment. And that began quite a journey for me. Some of you had that experience. And so for the next 10 days, I went through this incredible battle of fear. And I'm going to come back to that in a few minutes. But here we see a story, very simple story. Again, one that you're probably familiar with, but John the Baptist. In chapter 1, in John, in his account, he had baptized Jesus. John was kind of the big deal in the country at that time. People were coming all the way from Jerusalem and around Judea, coming to the Jordan River, which is quite a walk, and it's kind of like driving through Kansas. Actually, it's worse than driving through Kansas. There's not any wheat even. It's just sand and rock and heat. But he was there, thousands of people, it's estimated. Thousands were coming to him to be baptized. Now, in the Jewish tradition, baptism was taking place because they didn't have a sacrificial system at that time, except what the high priest would do. You know, earlier when they had the tabernacle and things, you know, they could go and they could do their animal sacrifices. But how do you do redemption if you can't do that? So baptism had become a part of their experience, and baptism and purification to be cleansed and to be redeemed. And so that's what's happening. People are coming to John. He's the big deal. You know, he's the Billy Graham of the day or whoever the big deal at the time. And everyone's coming to him. And after Jesus, verse 22 of chapter 3, and after Jesus and his disciples went to the Judean countryside, he remained there, and with them he was baptizing. So this is after John had baptized him, I don't know, a few weeks, a few months. And now he's at the Jordan River, Jesus and his disciples, and he's baptizing people. People now are coming to Jesus to be baptized. And then it says in verse 23, John also was baptizing near Siloam because water was plentiful there. And the people were coming and being baptized. So look at that again. People were going to Jesus and they were what? Being baptized. And they were also coming to John near the same place but at a distance, also being baptized. Okay, it says that. Both of them were baptizing. Excuse me. And now a discussion arose between some of John's disciples and a few Jews over purification. You know, just like today, we have to debate everything. You know, so they're talking about, you know, I don't know what they're talking about. You know, do you dip once? Do you dip twice? I don't know. You know, are you really purified? Do you have to get purified next week or can you wait a month? You know, I don't know what they were debating. Those debates still go on today. Churches split and divide sometimes over these kinds of things. So they're having this debate. And they go on, and they came to John, verse 26, and they said to him, Rabbi, he who was with you across the Jordan, referring to Jesus, to whom you have bore witness, which, just pause there a minute. So John had been telling them all the time, this transition is going to happen. You know, he's been saying it to them, you know, for at least weeks, maybe months. He's saying, you know, there's another one coming. Remember the guy baptized. They remember. Remember the guy that you baptized. Remember the guy you bore witness of. The guy that you've been telling us is going to be the guy. Well, he's down there. Let me just read it. Look, he is baptizing, and all, it's an important word in this sentence, all are going to him. Now, what did I just read a few verses earlier? Was Jesus baptizing people? Yes. Were people still coming, John, to be baptized? Yes. But what did the disciples see? Everybody's going to Jesus. You see, fear was beginning to grip them. They had all the knowledge. John had been telling them, look, guys, I'm not the guy. The guy's coming, you know. He's going to be the guy that everything's really about. He's coming. And so they have all the knowledge. They have had they see that people are going to him, but they also see people are still coming to them, but they don't see that anymore. They're beginning to fear, like, what's going to happen? I don't know what they were thinking, you know. We're not going to get a paycheck anymore if everybody goes to him. You know, there goes the locusts, you know. We won't be able to afford locusts and rags to wear. You know, these guys were desperate. I can understand a little bit what they're afraid of. But, you know, they're fear just like the rest of us. You know, there's a change coming. There's a transition coming. All of a sudden, our meal ticket may be gone. All of a sudden, our influence. We may not have influence anymore if everybody's going to go to Jesus. Now, we can put anything into this slot. Anything that we lose control. Anything that brings transition, like illness or loss or some kind of suffering, you know, from finances to health, you know, to our children going through things that we can't control, we can't fix. We've all experienced those things. And those are can be fearful moments. Just like for me, when you sit in a doctor's office and they say you have cancer, really what you hear is you're going to die. And then she says, oh, come back in 10 days and we'll talk about it. So for 10 days, you really don't understand, and don't go to the internet. Just warn you, don't go to the internet. Just wait 10 days and pray. I didn't, but my wife did. But for 10 days, all of a sudden the enemy's right there at your doorstep. For me, it usually happened about 4 a.m. every morning. I'd wake up, and he just kept bombarding me with fearful, plausible words of discouragement. In other words, they had truth in them. Hey, you could die. I mean, I can remember, you know, you may not be here for Christmas. You know, you're not going to get to see your grandkids grow up. Actually, one of them was, they're not even going to remember you. They're not going to know you. You know, then you think, there's not enough money in the bank, you know, to take care of, sustain your wife for the rest of your life. You know, I mean, the list just goes on and on. You know, this is going to be painful. I mean, he's just bombarding you. Okay? And I did the only thing I knew to do was to say, okay, Lord, but I know that you love me. I know that you're somehow in the midst of this. I know that somehow I am going to have to focus on you and what you can do and your bigger picture, your higher truth than what I'm feeling and what I'm hearing and what I'm being bombarded with. You know, and after about 30 minutes, 40 minutes of going through this prayer thing and getting my eyes away from the fear and putting it over on the Lord, I get some victory until 4 a.m. the next morning and the next morning. And the next morning, and through those few days, though, you know, I went to where you have to go. I went to the Word. I went to prayer. God reminded me of David in his Psalms. You know, about 103 to 107 of the Psalms were written by David, and many of those, not all of them, but many of those have a kind of a pattern in them. They usually start something like this: "Oh God, I have cancer. I'm going to die." Now, he didn't have cancer, but he was. How many times did he say, my enemies are going to kill me? Everyone's against me. You ever had that thought? Everything is out of control in my life. There's nothing going right. I am perplexed. I am confused. I'm in trouble. Everything's in chaos in my life. So many of David's Psalms start that way. But somewhere in the middle, after a few of those groaning and moanings that have a lot of truth in them, he says, oh, but the steadfast love of the Lord never changes. The steadfast love of the Lord is bigger than my circumstances. See, that's a critical thing. And he says, and usually ends it with something like, I will go to the Lord who is my fortress, who is my strength, who is the one that will sustain me. Not always. He doesn't say they're the one that will fix the problems, although I'm sure that's what he's hoping for, and often the Lord did. But he didn't say that. He says, I will go, you're my fortress, to go through it. You know, we live in a culture and in a theological time, I'm sorry, but this is the truth, that we tend to say we're not supposed to go through any kind of suffering. We're not supposed to experience any kind of pain. We're supposed to instantaneously just have what we want. It makes us feel good and happy. And we call that's having great faith. I'm not sure that's completely true. I think sometimes it's true. Sometimes we don't even grow in faith unless we go through the suffering. Read the Bible, read church history, and I think that's what you'll find. I'm all for healing. Let me tell you, I'm all for healing. I've been prayed for by some pretty significant people with that gift. I believe God's healing me. But even if he doesn't, he's my refuge. He's my fortress. He's my strength. And I'm not going to live under fear. I'm going to live in joy in the midst of what's been the hardest few months of my life. And I'm going to have victory. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to have victory maybe in all the ways I think, but victory in the big things, in the kingdom things. And so here we see, back to the story. Everyone's going to him. You know, they're really saying, John, what are you going to do? I mean, this really affects you, buddy. You are the big guy. You're it. And now this guy's kind of trying to take over. Man, what does John say in verse 27? A person cannot receive even one thing unless it's given to him from heaven. Now, I've preached this message before in a different context and season of my life, and the reality is John had already made the transition. You got to realize historically, this is a huge story, because the big story is we're making the transition from the old covenant to the new covenant. This is one of the biggest transitions ever in humanity. We're going to leave and get away from the curse. We're going to get away from religion. We're going to get away from us trying to climb that ladder that doesn't exist, trying to behave right, trying to earn our way to God. He's saying this is a transition, because the one coming is the Messiah, the one that since Jeremiah they've been prophesying about, the one who would redeem us and free us from the law and the curse of the garden and let us live in grace and peace and love. This is the big transition. Now, very few people knew that at this time. I think John somehow did. And John had already made a transition, though even a bigger maybe transition was in his heart. Somewhere along the line, John figured, if you go back chapter 1, he'd already figured out who he was, his identity. Because they'd come to him, who are you? Who are you? Well, I'm not the guy. I'm not the Messiah. I'm not Elijah. I'm not whoever you might think I am. I've just come to prepare the way for the guy. And here it's happening. He's in the midst of that transition, of that actually happening. His disciples are full of fear, full of discontent. But he says, hey, nothing that we have comes to us except from God. And you yourselves bear witness that I said, I'm not the Christ, but I've been sent before him. The one who has the bride is the bridegroom. The friend of the bridegroom who stands and hears him rejoices greatly at the bridegroom's voice. He's saying, look, I'm not the bride or the bridegroom. I'm a groomsman, man. I'm the best man, maybe. And I'm celebrating. This thing's happening. The one who we need, the one that can restore us, the one that can bring us life, he's come. Don't focus on me. I'm not even going to focus on me. I'm going to focus on this great event, this great time. And then it gets even better. Therefore, this joy of mine is now complete. They are in chaos. They are in total fear as disciples. But he says, my joy is complete. I mean, he's getting ready to become nobody. In fact, not long from now, he's going to be separated from his head. And he says, man, I'm experiencing joy. This is great. I'm not losing anything. In fact, the next verse that you've all heard, verse 30, he must increase, but I must decrease. Now note that it doesn't say I must decrease and he must increase. Word order is pretty important here. He must increase. I don't have to lower myself. I don't have to become less than for him to get bigger in me. It's the opposite. As I see him, as he becomes more powerful, more clear, more known in my life, My issues become less. My suffering becomes less. My disease becomes less. This is a principle of God that brings life to us. I mean, because he was getting ready to become nobody. The guy on top of the mountain now was going to would not even be seen anymore. He's not talked about much after this except getting his head chopped off. You see, instead of letting fear grip him, instead of letting this transition, this change, this loss control his days and his steps now, he says, man, my joy is complete. This is wonderful. I tell you that the last 3 months have been the most rich time in my life spiritually. It's been the most difficult physically. I've been more out of control. Actually, it's the only time I really feel like I've been out of control of my life. And yet, I feel closer to God than I ever have. My faith has grown, not decreased. Well, you know, you've been prayed for and you haven't been healed. That hasn't decreased my faith. I've only increased it because I keep praying. And I don't pray just for healing. Please listen to this. I still pray for healing, but I'm not praying for healing alone. I'm praying for all the things that God wants to do in my life through this experience, and in my wife's life, and in my children's life, and in my friends' lives, and in every person that I meet along the way during this journey now. You see, God isn't doing one thing at a time. He's doing hundreds of things at a time. And he uses our trials, our sufferings, our loss, if we will get our eyes off the fear and get it onto the higher truth. You know, I do have cancer. I don't pretend I don't have cancer. You know, I have cancer. You heard me confess it. I have it. I've seen the bone scans. I didn't know I was sick till they told me. Now that I'm in chemo, I'm like, wow, I guess I am sick. But I can focus on that. See, at 4 a.m., I could just let that just bring discouragement and depression and self-pity and just say, you know, I'm just going to isolate myself. I'm just going to, you know, do whatever. But instead, like David, you know what? God's here. God's bigger than this. You know, those of you who dealt a lot in medical stuff, which I just recently had the last couple of years, I realize it's all about the numbers. Everything's about a number, right? You go to a lab and they print out the sheet and this number's in the right range and this number in the right range. And if you don't have the right range, they give you medicine. That's what they do. So I could do that. You know, give me the sheet. I can tell me what medicine. I can disperse this stuff. But our good friend who went through cancer in the last few years, God's miraculously done a work in her physical body, just remind us, there's those numbers, but God numbers your days. That's the only number you got to worry about. And you don't have to worry about that number because you can't change it. So you can focus on the fear and you can let it grip you, or you can go through that process and say, oh, Lord's in this, Lord loves me, his love hasn't changed for me. Nothing's changed with God, only my circumstance. Now, I can waller around in that, or I can say, you know what? I'm going to focus on the higher truth. That God's in this. I'm going to walk through this in joy. I'm not going to walk through this in fear. I'm going to embrace it. I don't want it. I'm going to keep letting everybody pray that I get healed. I'm going to keep praying that I'm healed. Don't misunderstand me. But when I get healed, I want to be much better. I want him to have increased in my life much more. And I want my faith to be greater. I want my compassion, my whatever he wants to do through that to be better. Does that make sense? I don't want to pretend I don't have it. I want to intentionally pursue God. I'm not focused on my cancer. I'm going to focus on him. And it's amazing how much more clarity I have sometimes. How much more conscious awareness I have that God's right here. He's in this today. He's given me a day. And now that day's pretty significant. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, don't you feel, I mean, now it's, you got, everything's more urgent because you don't have, you know, your life could be shortened. It's like, you know, actually, I feel less urgency than I've ever felt. Just a peace. Like, I don't have to go out and make something happen. I just have to to draw closer to the Lord today than I ever have, and then respond in obedience to Him. And do that from joy instead of depression and being downtrodden and those things. You know, it was about a year and a half ago when I was here sometime. I know it was last year. I was here and Joe preached the message. And you may remember it. He had a table set out here. There was a table and he was talking about Psalms 23 verse 5. He has prepared a table for me in the presence of my enemies. And that really stuck with me in a lot of ways. And the Lord's brought that back to me, that picture. Because to me, it's one of those kind of crazy verses. Like, He's prepared a table. He wants me to sit with Him, you know, and Sabbath with Him and have rest with Him and engage with Him. Remember, it's Psalms 23, by the way. As I walk through the valley of shadow of death, He's prepared a table for me. And then it says, but in the presence of my enemies. Why does He do that? Just get rid of the enemies and you and I can just eat pizza all day, Lord. I mean, why are You still letting the enemies be around us? Remember James 5 says the enemy's what? He's like a roaring lion, walking around seeking whom he may devour. So picture it. Here I am sitting at the table with the Lord, 4 a.m., because I've been hearing the roaring of the lion. I mean, our old friend Elton McMillan used to say, yeah, he roars like a lion, but he ain't got any teeth. He just makes noise. Well, He does. And He wants us to hear the noise, and He wants us to take our focus off what the Lord has said and start listening to the voice. And what He does is He wants to go over and grab one of these chairs, and He just wants to bring it up and sit at the table with you. And He wants to just keep talking. You know, you see, the enemies didn't go away. See, this is important, I think, for us to understand. You know, lots of times God takes care of our enemies. He takes care of our circumstances, and we thank Him for that. He's gracious to do that. But sometimes He lets the enemies, He doesn't remove them, because He wants us to make this exchange in our heart to Him and away from that. If we didn't have those problems, if we didn't have those situations, how often do you think we would not even look to the Lord? Because we don't need Him. It's the story of Israel. It's the story of humanity. When we live in a garden where everything is provided and there's only one tree we're not supposed to eat from, will you go eat that tree? Because we took our focus off the foundational reality of who God was and that He loves us and He's our provider. We're not the owner. There's two truths in play. And what I want to experience is what I want to have the faith of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in Daniel chapter 3, where they're about to be thrown into the fiery furnace. And they make this statement, which I think is one of the most powerful faith statements in Scripture. We know our God can deliver us, but even if He doesn't, we're not going to bow to your gods. We're not going to be any different. In fact, it's going to cause us to be even stronger. Because You can throw us in the fiery furnace and we're not afraid. We don't have no fear. And He may let the fire consume us. We know He may not. That's our hope. But even if He doesn't, we're not afraid of You. You're not going to make us bow to Your thing. See, that's power. That's power. That's faith increasing and growing in your life, and that's what I've been experiencing. So I don't try to persuade you theologically. I try to persuade you through my testimony. No matter what circumstance you're in, don't be condemned if you haven't. It's not fixed. Don't be condemned if you didn't get healed and maybe everyone else did, which doesn't usually happen, actually. You know, my missions pastor used to go to India and in Africa every year, and he would lay hands on people, and he's even had people raised from the dead. But in the last 5 years, he can't get healed for a heart condition. So you're trying to tell me this guy isn't a man of God or he doesn't believe in healing? No. God's doing something. And he still goes to Africa. He still goes to India. He's 80 years old. And God gives him the strength to do that. Why? Because he's not going to wallow around in what doesn't happen to me. He says, I'm just going to keep doing what God's put in my heart to do. And you know what? It's made his message stronger than ever. Because people see the strength, not of him, they see the strength of God, how it works, how it happens. Let me finish with these things. This is what I'm learning and believing. If I can learn to live in the greater joy, not focus on the lesser, but say, you know what? Yeah, I got cancer. I could die. Or I could eat thousands of apricot seeds and this mushroom and that mushroom and I can, and refuse treatment, or I can take treatment, and on it goes. But the reality is I can only trust in the Lord and do what I feel he leads me to do. These are the things I'm learning. If I can focus on joy, if I can say, you know what? This isn't about the circumstance. It's about what God can do through it. And yeah, I know the enemy wants to take me out, but I put a much higher value on what God can do. And these are the things I'm realizing. One is I can become content in all situations, like Paul talks about. I've had it all. Everything's been easy. I've had it hard. But it doesn't really matter what my circumstance is. Christ first. Christ first. I'm living for him. Secondly, I can live in joy instead of fear, even through suffering, change, loss, or being out of control. I can live in joy. And let me tell you, that's not my natural thing. My natural thing is to be, I see the problems, I see, my wife's the joy person. And drives me crazy. And obviously I drive her crazy. But God is changing that in my life. I've experienced more joy in my life the last 3 months than I've ever experienced. Doesn't mean I haven't had moments. The enemy's still... I'm at the table of the Lord, but the enemy's still around. He likes to remind me of what could happen, what if. Third, I increase in courage to embrace suffering and seek to grow through it, and it's planned for me. I don't give up. My hope is in his healing, but my courage is in him. It doesn't matter what happens to me. I'm gonna walk and hear where he leads me. I'm gonna learn to love instead of having judgment, be critical, devaluing others. That all I experience can bring his increase in my life and in the life of those around me. I've seen it in my children. I've seen some neat things happen through this experience. And I want to follow the example of Jesus himself, who knew, in the Garden of Eden. That's where the real battle took place, not on the cross. The battle took place in the garden since Matthew 4, we hadn't heard from Satan. And now in the garden, he shows up at Jesus' darkest hour. He always comes at the dark hour. And he says, you shouldn't have to do this. And Jesus says, what? Take this cup away from me. Just like me saying, heal me, Lord. I don't want to go through cancer. I don't want to go through treatment. I don't want to go through all this stuff, but just like David. But he just remembers the Father's love for him. He sees the Father's love for you. You see, when you suffer, it isn't just about you, maybe. Maybe it's about all the people around you that God says, I can use this because I love them. And maybe through this, somehow I can do part of my plan that I couldn't do, that you wouldn't even notice if you weren't suffering. And so Jesus goes through that battle. It wasn't 4 a.m., but it was getting close. And he went through that battle. And he came on the other side and said, the Father loves me. I can trust the Father. I can trust his love for those that he's going to help let me suffer for. And Hebrews 12:2 says, and for joy he endured the cross. And joy he endured the cross. From that moment on, I believe even in his pain and physical suffering, he was doing it and there was a joy inside of him, not fear. How could you go through that with any other way? And that's how I want to go through this. And I want to encourage you, if you're going through suffering, if you're in a situation and you have no control, God's right there. He's right there. Nothing's going to separate. No circumstance is going to separate you from Him. And if you think it is, you're listening to the lion running around with no teeth but a big mouth. And He's going to tell you things that have some truth in it, but it's not the higher truth. And I hope that you can embrace Him. Lord, we thank You that You love us so much that even in suffering, sometimes that perhaps we cause, perhaps the enemy brings it, Lord, whatever the reason we have it is less important than the fact that You are still right there. And You are with us and for us, and You're going to take us to the place You want us to be. And it's not only for us and for our good, it's for those around us. Help us see the bigger picture, not just our own suffering, our own circumstance. Let us have victory. Let us be overcomers in the midst of any circumstance, in any situation. Thank You for Your love, Lord. Amen.